In Exodus chapter 3, starting in verse 4, after Moses has seen a bush that was burning but not being consumed, we read, "And when the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, 'Moses, Moses.' And he said, 'Here am I.' Then he said, 'Do not come near. Put off your shoes from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground.' And he said, 'I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob.' And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, 'I have seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And now, behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppress them. Come, I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring forth my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt.' But Moses said to God, 'Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt?' He said, 'But I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought forth the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God upon this mountain.' Then Moses said to God, 'If I come to the people of Israel and say to them, The God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, What is his name? What shall I say to them?' God said to Moses, 'Yahweh, I am who I am.' And he said, 'Say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you.'" Moving further down in the passage to chapter 4, verse 1. "Then Moses answered, 'But behold, they will not believe me or listen to my voice, for they will say, The Lord did not appear to you.' The Lord said to him, 'What is that in your hand?' He said, 'A rod.' And he said, 'Cast it on the ground.' So he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent, and Moses fled from it. But the Lord said to Moses, put out your hand and take it by the tail.' So he put out his hand and caught it, and it became a rod in his hand, that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. Again, the Lord said to him, 'Put your hand into your bosom.' And he put his hand into his bosom. And when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous, as white as snow. Then God said, 'Put your hand back into your bosom.' So he put his hand back into his bosom, and when he took it out, behold, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. 'If they will not believe you,' God said, 'or heed the first sign, that they may believe the latter sign. If they will not believe even these two signs or heed your voice, you shall take some water from the Nile and pour it upon the dry ground. And the water from which you shall take from the Nile will become blood upon the dry ground.' But Moses said to the Lord, 'Oh, my Lord, I am not eloquent, either heretofore or since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and of tongue.' The Lord said to him, 'Who has made man's mouth? Who has made him dumb or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now, therefore, go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall speak.' But he said, 'Oh, my Lord, send, I pray, some other person.' Then the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, 'Is there not Aaron, your brother, the Levite? I know he can speak well, and behold, he is coming out to meet you. And when he sees you, he will be glad with his heart. And you shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth and will teach you what you shall do. He shall speak for you to the people, and he shall be a mouth for you, and you shall be to him as God. And you shall take in your hand this rod with which you shall do the signs.'" Maybe, perhaps, you once read the book, "I Heard the Owl Call My Name," about a young priest who was sent to a native tribe in British Columbia. This priest has only a few years to live, though he is really not aware that his time is that short. But his vicar sends him there, hoping that he can learn some things about both life and living, and death and dying from the natives. in order that when his time comes, he will be better prepared to face death. In their tradition, this particular tribe believed that when the owl called your name, that meant that soon you would die. Now, of course, most people don't believe such things. Well, many don't. And for a lot of others, they would almost rather die and hear the owl call their name than to hear God call their name other than for salvation. Okay, God, you can call my name on the roll up yonder when the time comes, although I don't want it to be too soon. But don't call for any other reason. Please. Especially don't call on me to serve. Well, some of you answered that call with a nominating committee report, and others have answered the call over the years for a variety of other positions. And today we come to set aside one who has answered that call as Deacon Kenneth Selfridge. But you know, it's not just non-believers who don't want to hear God call their name, and it's not even just nominal believers. Often this reaction is from people who claim to be strong believers. And we think about Moses and Abraham, and we said, you know, we can't be those kinds of people with those great leadership skills. That's part of why we came here today to Exodus 3 and 4. Because Moses really didn't want to hear God call his name for service. Now, he was all for God rescuing the people of Israel. He might have, even if he could have found some pom-poms, said, go get them, God, and cheered when God said, I've heard the people's cry and I'm going to deliver them. Until God says, and I am going to send you. And Moses said, oh, no. Not me. And so, we often forget how reluctant Moses was. And not only here, but throughout his service, there were times where he raised questions and was reluctant. But I want us to revisit that call today, to look at some of Moses' attempts to avoid it, not only within the context of deacon ordination, but also God's call to each of us and upon each of our lives. Now, if you recall, Moses was raised in the house of the Pharaoh, probably Seti I, one of whose sons was Ramses II or Ramses the Great, who was probably the Pharaoh of the Exodus with whom Moses had to deal. Moses was from an oppressed people, yes, but Moses had all of the best being raised in Pharaoh's house. The best food, the best housing, the best privileges, the greatest library in the world, and all kinds of other things that people could only imagine and hope for. Yet, when he finally decides that he's going to take a stand on behalf of God's people, remember he killed an Egyptian that was beating a Hebrew slave. Of course, it took a little while. He was 40 years old when he finally decided to do something. Moses becomes a hunted man. And he runs away. He escapes and builds actually a very comfortable life for himself, with family, with land, with power and privilege, with possessions. And then one day he finds out something about God that we have talked about a lot, even mentioned it last week, I think, that blessing, benefit, and position from God always come with expectations of responsibility. God doesn't just hand out the winning lottery ticket and expect you to run off and do whatever and blow it on yourself. God always expects responsible action when he blesses someone. Not exactly what we want to hear sometimes, right? And Moses decided he really wasn't so keen about this call either. And so he begins making excuses. He begins trying to argue with God as to why he shouldn't do this. Now, we've spoken about these years ago, but I want to think about them once again with kind of a 21st century mindset. First of all, what did Moses say? And then, what or how do we say it in our own lives in the 21st century? Well, his first excuse, which is probably predicated in part upon the fact that the last time he left Egypt, there was a price on his head, and he really didn't want to go back because he thought that price probably had increased over time. The first thing he did was to say to God, well, I'm a nobody to go to Pharaoh. Probably thinking in the back of his mind, please don't remember I was raised in that house. Well, today, what do we say sometimes? You know, I'm just not important enough. Same kind of excuse. Same kind of attempt to get out of that call. But so, thanks God, but I'm just not that important. We look at the world. We look at the country. And we assess the importance of people by what? By money? By power? By fame? And yet, if you really think about it, when God called Moses, even though he had money and position, what was he? A shepherd. He was a herder of sheep from an oppressed people. An oppressed people. And he says, with me, you are important. You know, he says, I'm nobody to go to Pharaoh. God says, oh, but I'm with you. And that makes you important. And God is with each one of us every time He calls. And that makes us important in various ways wherever we serve. Doesn't mean we have to be great and wonderful in and of ourselves. God promises His steadfastness to see us through. In Exodus 3:13. He says, well, I really don't know your true name. In other words, I'm really not holy enough to know your inmost being. I haven't gotten to know you quite that well, so thanks, but I'm really not holy enough to go and speak for you in your greatness. Oftentimes these days, rather than speaking for God, we decide, well, I'll move along and look for the next best thing or the newest fad. But in the midst of all of this, we find that God gives us the power of His name. Here He says to Moses, tell them, Yahweh has sent me. That word means I am who I am, and I am what I am. And that changes things for you, God said. Because of who He is, the one true God, He promised Moses, you can stand in front of the people and you can repeat this holiest of names because I'm the one that makes you worthy, not yourself. And so when, like Moses, we want to say, well, you know, I appreciate it, but I'm really not worthy. I'm not holy enough. God says, you're not the one that has to be holy because I am. And I am with you in all of that service. Well, you'd think that Moses might give up after this, but he's not quite ready yet. And as we know, he says, well, you know, they might not believe me. We kind of put it this way a lot of times today. Well, you know, I appreciate it, but I just might fail at it, and I don't want to fail. Yeah. We don't have to be perfect. Not as Christians, not as deacons, not in any other place of service. We don't have to be perfect. Yeah. We've got there's a campaign going on now. I don't know if you've noticed or not, but sometimes commercial on TV, but billboards. And you don't have to be perfect to be the perfect parent. There's much more to that than trying to be perfect. It's about being there and caring. We don't have to be perfect. And all of us will fail at some point in time. In fact, I'll ask, is anybody in here who's never failed? If so, please stand up. Okay, time's up. We all do. We all disappoint at some point in time. And God knows, and only God knows, how many times we have disappointed God. But God remains ever present with us to help us even when we face trial and even when we seem to fail. Jesus said in our prayers we should ask, lead us not into trial, but deliver us from evil. Doesn't mean that we're not going to have trials and we're not going to fail, but that God would help us to get through to the other side. In chapter 4, verse 10, as we have it recorded, when God has given Moses signs that I am with you and I'm going to be with you, and even if you fail at some things, I'm still there. Moses says, well, you know, I really don't know how to talk so good. I'm not eloquent. I don't know the right words to say. The way we do that these days, you know, that's not one of my talents. Serving in that position, that's just not one of my talents. Now, give me something else. No. God says, I'm the one who gives the talent. I'm the one who gives the gift. I'm the one who will sustain it. And while we would think Moses had given up, he said, well, you know, God, I really appreciate it, but why don't you send somebody else who's better than I am? You know, most Christians fall into these last two categories. I'm really not talented enough, send somebody else. And we do that. We send out missionaries, right? When we got a mission field right around the corner, or maybe the next yard over, or perhaps in our own house. But God calls each and every one to some type of service. Service to God and service to others. My systematic theology professor once said, you know, if you don't serve in the right place, then it becomes the wrong place. And the right thing doesn't get done. Now, I'm sure the first deacons in Acts chapter 6 raised all kinds of arguments and excuses. Some of them probably would have been familiar to Moses. I mean, really, God's call in their life was to be something and to do something in a place that was very scary. But God also let them know that His call was to be greater than they could be themselves. Now, that's awesome. It's also very scary. But as God promised to be with Moses, meeting every excuse he had with an answer, so God will be with each of us, and Kenneth, God will be with you. When we look at God's call upon Moses' life, and His call upon the lives of those first deacons, and His call upon the lives of each of us, but especially those who serve in leadership positions ever since, there's some things that I think we need to look toward and remember. First of all, God calls you to be faithful. To be faithful in sharing hurts and hopes, concerns and celebrations, pains and praises, questions and answers. Together. Now, I know that you oftentimes think maybe these are out of order. You would say hopes and hurts, celebrations and concerns, but I put them in this order for a particular purpose. When we learn, grow, and serve faithfully, then hurts can find hope. Concerns can lead us to celebrations. Pains can bring us to praise, and questions can lead us not only toward answers, but toward more commitment in seeking God and God's insights. And while these are tasks for every Christian, not just getting saved, they're especially important for those who are set aside as deacons and called to be servants. We know that Kenneth has already done a number of things around here, and he's been very involved, in part because of the recognition of that and that commitment. You have seen within Kenneth something which has led you to be led by God to call him to serve as a deacon. So, Kenneth, as we think further on that call to you and of you to serve as a deacon, I want to remind us all, but especially you, of the qualifications and expectations for all deacons. The first ones were simple. Go to Acts chapter 6, says a good reputation, full of the wisdom and full of the Spirit, and then faithful to the church and its mission. That didn't mean deacons would never fail in serving, but they'd never fail to get up and to continue to move forward with God's help, just like Moses eventually did. And that challenge is there for you. It's a responsibility that will follow you from this day forward in your journey with God, but you don't have to face it alone, because most importantly, God is there with you. And beyond that, you have other deacons and others to help and to learn from you as well. Later on in 1 Timothy chapter 3, we find other expectations and qualifications. Deacons are to be sober-minded or serious, with Bible study, with the needs of their family and the needs of the church. They're not to be double-tongued, filled with honesty and integrity. They're to hold fast the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. That is, to deepen their relationship with God, to grow and to help others grow, loving God with the mind as well as the heart. Deacons are also called to be faithful. Faithful in all things for God, in things for their family, and for the church. For each deacon ordination in which I have had the privilege to be a part, I've had a couple of quotes, one from Carlisle Marnie, and I would like to continue that tradition because I think it speaks to all of us in service, but especially to deacons. Carlisle Marnie wrote a book entitled Priests to Each Other. He says, Christians are to remember several things as we serve. First of all, the highest calling is to be a Christian. Secondly, remember, we are appointed to serve people and God, and on their behalf. There is not a yours and mine, but rather this is ours. And remember that we have weaknesses. Even though we are called to serve, we are forgiven sinners because we are sinners. God expects us to be prudent and gentle when helping others learn from their mistakes, because God has given us that privilege to learn from ours. A part of deacon service is to live out gentleness and compassion. And I would give you a charge, but remind us all to minister of our charge from God. You and we need to be leaders who constantly seek to better understand God's call on our life, to see ourselves as servant leaders. We're not CEOs. To be team builders and cooperators. To be priestly leaders who seek the best for the whole. To remember that we're called to be statespersons who listen and prayerfully consider all the options. We're to remember that we're not to be afraid to seek informed help and to ask questions. And we're called to be wise and patient, recognizing that not only do we grow slowly in our service, but others around us do as well. Kenneth, I'm sure that you've seen examples of this service that are good, and you've probably seen some that aren't so good. But you know, the church isn't perfect. This is a day of honor and privilege. But it's also a day to remember the history of God, not only as seen in the Bible, but throughout your history. And remember that God never gives that honor or privilege without us serving responsibly. A tall order. Sometimes a scary task. But one which brings God glory. And it is my prayer and my hope that Christ's life will shine forth even more through you as a deacon. Amen. And amen. Kenneth, at this time, I'm going to ask you to come and to kneel facing the altar. As anyone who has been ordained as a minister or a deacon, you're invited, whether a member of this church or another, to come if you would like. If you've been ordained as a minister or as a deacon, to come and to place your hands on Kenneth's head and share a prayer or words with him as we set him apart for deacon service.